This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight,
countries that participate just by exporting commodities or raw materials, we don't have any evidence that they grow very fast. And this is unfortunately very much consistent with the experience many developing countries have had, especially resource-rich countries in Africa.
That's World Bank's chief economist Penelope Goldberg on the need for African countries to boost their participation in global trade. Details next also. The U.S. Secretary of Defense says the United States will not totally withdraw its forces from Africa. And the UN says close to 5 million children in Burkina Faso, Mali, and Niger will need humanitarian assistance in the coming years. And East Africa is experiencing its worst desert locust invasion in a quarter century. We'll have these stories and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story, the World Bank says African economies are not fully participating in global trade and that investment flows to the continent remain low compared with other regions. Despite considerable economic growth, a visiting senior official of the International Lenders says trade in sub-Saharan Africa remains low, accounting for just 2% of total world trade. From the Kenyan capital, Ruben Chama reports.
Speaking to reporters in Nairobi recently, the World Bank Group's chief economist, Penelope Goldberg, said African economies can achieve better outcomes for their citizens through reforms that boost their participation in global trade.
Countries that participate just by exporting commodities or raw materials, we don't have any evidence that they grow very fast. And this is unfortunately very much consistent with the experience many developing countries have had, especially resource-rich countries in Africa. They may export, they may have high exports, but these exports don't translate to growth. They certainly don't translate to per capita income growth.
The senior World Bank economist says these reforms can help countries expand from commodity exports to basic manufacturing while ensuring that economic benefits are shared more widely across society. She gave the examples of Kenya and Ethiopia, which she said are transforming their economies by deepening participation in the global market through manufacturing.
Kenya has increased its participation in global value chain, but it's still lower compared to what the global average is. The same, by the way, applies to Ethiopia. And Ethiopia is also mentioned often as a success case, a country that's growing very fast. But in both cases, if you see what's happening, is the growth in both countries is substantially lower than the growth that developing countries have experienced in the past. In other words, we don't see in Kenya or Ethiopia what we saw in East Asia.
The World Bank defines a global value chain as the breaking up of the production process across countries. As a result, companies specialize in a specific task and do not produce the whole product. Goldberg says global value chains have powered economic transformation in countries such as South Korea, Vietnam, and Mexico, allowing them to quickly climb the development ladder. Such chains, she said, enable developing countries to specialize and grow wealthier without having to build whole industries from scratch. The senior official from the Washington-based Bretton Woods Institution gave more details.
Countries that participate through limited manufacturing, again, these are textiles for the most part, footwear, these are the countries that grow the fastest. They have grown by 57%. So per capita, this is all per capita. So per capita income growth is cumulatively 57%. So essentially, this is the story of East Asia here. So this is the story of Vietnam and Korea, and before that, Japan in the early days and China.
But the effects of climate change pose a major threat to global trade, among other factors, she said. However, the World Bank expert says global value chains can support development if developing countries undertake deep reforms and industrialized nations such as the United States and the European Union member states pursue open and predictable policies. According to the World Economic Report, Africa's economic performance over the past 15 years has improved considerably. The World Bank report says four of the world's fastest growing economies are in Africa. These are Ghana, Ethiopia, Rwanda, and Cote d'Ivoire. But the region's participation in global trade remains low, experts warn. George Njenga is an associate professor at the Strathmore University Business School.
I think that it is time the Africa Continental Free Trade Area started rethinking, without stopping global trade, but rethinking how we are going to create lower cost distribution of goods and services across this continent. I can tell you, you will open up an incredible amount of income for the people, but we are too far in terms of governance, in terms of building skills amongst our people.
Today, global value chains account for nearly 50% of trade worldwide, but their growth has plateaued since the financial crisis of 2008. Ruben Chama, VOA News, Nairobi.
And some breaking news in the last hour. U.S. Secretary of Defense Mark Esper said the United States is reviewing its troop positions worldwide, but will not totally withdraw its forces from Africa. The review comes as the U.S. Department of Defense has a new focus on great power competition, namely with China, Russia, and others, and less on counterterrorism, which has dominated American military activity in Africa over the last decade. But that does not mean there necessarily will be cuts to force levels. Here are Defense Secretary Esper's comments at the news conference this morning.
I know the inclination is whenever somebody says review, the word that automatically pops up in their head is reduction, right? When we do reviews, I like to say it is a rebalancing, if you will, a right-sizing. In some cases, we will increase. In some cases, we won't change. In some cases, we will decrease. When it comes to great power competition, those are areas in both AFRICOM and SOUTHCOM that I'm looking at increasing our posture, not necessarily reducing our posture. So I want to make sure that we compete, but it's also a global competition with Russia and China, and we need to make sure that we're well postured to deal with them as appropriate wherever we may find that presence. We're not going to totally withdraw forces from Africa. Economy of force doesn't mean complete withdrawal from any continent.
The U.S. has numerous military bases and outposts in Africa, including a large base in Djibouti. The U.S. military has also worked closely on counterterrorism in Africa with Somalia, Kenya, Uganda, Nigeria, Niger, Mali, and other nations. The United Nations Children's Fund, UNICEF, says close to 5 million children in Burkina Faso, Mali, and Niger will need humanitarian assistance over the course of 2020, up from 4.3 million. This projection is linked to a surge in violence that has included attacks against children and civilians, as well as abductions and recruitment of children into armed groups. Mavis Ocheri in Ghana has more.
Since the start of 2019, more than 670,000 children across the Sahel has been forced to flee their homes because of armed conflict and insecurity. UNICEF says, for example, in Mali, there were 571 grave violations against children during the first three quarters of 2019, compared with 544 in 2018 and 386 in 2017. Odd Rigot, UNICEF West and Central Africa Regional Office in Dakar, says Burkina Faso, Mali, and Niger already face food insecurity and undernutrition, but with increase in armed violence last year in the Sahel region, the number of displaced people increased, and that adds to the struggle of communities where the displaced take shelter.
We observe some very grave violation of children's rights in those countries, such as killing, mutilation, sexual abuse, and also some imprisonment. And all those children, hundreds of thousands of them, face very traumatic experiences. And the crisis is not about the violence against the children, but it's also the impact of their development, as they do not have access anymore to education, to school, to health facilities. and to any protection makes that they are really at risk of being left behind.
Rigel says children affected by violence in Central Sahel urgently need protection and support. She called on government, armed forces, non-state armed groups and other parties in the conflict to stop attacks on children. She says UNICEF have been monitoring the closure of schools and health facilities. Since the end of 2019, 3,300 schools have been closed because of the violence affecting more than 650,000 children and 16,000 teachers.
Only in Burkina, as an example, we have almost 100 health facilities that are closed, making that more than 1.2 million people have no access or limited access to health facilities. We can imagine that for the development of the child, it will be critical.
Rigot says UNICEF is on the ground in Burkina Faso, Mali and Niger, working with partners to provide children with urgently needed health, education, food and sanitation services. She says the UN Children Organization has appealed for $208 million to support a humanitarian response in the Central Sahel for 2020. Reporting for VOA, this is Mavis Autry in Ghana.
East Africa is experiencing its worst desert locust invasion in a quarter century, and Kenya is seeing its worst in 70 years. Desert locusts have ravaged at least 11 of Kenya's 47 counties, leaving a trail of farmland destruction. Experts say if the locust invasion is not checked, it could pose a serious threat to food security and livelihoods in the region. Raila Mbor reports from Kitui County, Kenya.
Kenyan farmer Theophilus Kimanzi was expecting a bountiful harvest this season. But one morning last week, he woke up to find desert locusts had eaten all his crops. They feasted on the maize, green grams. They even ate watermelons. They also ate what was meant for our cows and goats. We have nothing much to do, apart from asking the government for help, he said. Besides Kenya, the record locust swarms have also hit parts of Ethiopia and Somalia, devouring crops and pastures. The United Nations Food and Agriculture Organization, FAO, says it is East Africa's worst desert locust invasion in 25 years, and for Kenya, the worst in 70 years. Authorities have deployed aircraft to spray and kill the locusts before they spread to neighboring South Sudan and Uganda. Stephen Njoka is the director of the East Africa Desert Locust Control Organization.
In Ethiopia, the organization has deployed two aircrafts, and they have been operating there since the month of August. And up to now, the locusts are still there. In Kenya, the locusts came here on the 28th of December, and immediately, working with the Minister of Agriculture, we deployed our two aircrafts.
Meanwhile, farmers like Kimanzi have tried everything from burning tires to making noise to try chase away the pests. The Intergovernmental Authority on Development, IGAD, and Northeast Africa Trade Bloc says more help is needed in the fight against locusts. Guleid Artan is the director of IGAD's Climate Prediction and Application Center.
If this is not dealt quickly and timely, this will have an effect. A really serious effect on the food security of the all of the region. From the last report from the Global Food Security Crisis Group, that IGAD's part, there were 27 million people who were in need of food aid, around 13 were due to climate. That will recover with good rains that they have received. That will worsen if this is not dealt in time.
Locusts are thriving because of changing weather patterns, says experts. John Recher is a climate scientist with the International Livestock Research Institute.
Right now, the locust invasion is associated with favorable environmental factors that range from the increased temperature and the wind movement that has been favorable in terms of making the swarms to move, and then also the rainfall that has been favorable.
But experts say the unexpected rainfall is also preventing drought that would only cause more crops to be destroyed. That's little comfort for farmers like Kimanzi, who are left counting their losses and hoping that the locusts can be stopped. Rai Lombor for VOA News, Kitui County, Kenya.
You're listening to African News Tonight on The Voice of America. Journalists in Cameroon's troubled English-speaking region say separatists are attacking them because of critical reporting and refusal to broadcast rebel propaganda. Media organizations say separatist intimidation is intensifying as Cameroon prepares for local and parliamentary elections, which the rebels have vowed to stop. Moke Edwin Kenzeka reports from Yaoundé.
Community radio station Stone FM in Cameroon's northwestern town of Ndop stopped broadcasting Monday. Manager and presenter Mbotna Zax Anabi says armed men stormed the station late Sunday night, firing shots into the air before setting the building on fire. Speaking via a messaging application, he says the suspected separatists left nothing.
Before burning, they first of all looted radio equipment. They burned the radio house as well as my own personal house. Maybe because I've been against broadcasting their messages and have been campaigning for school to go back.
Cameroon's separatists consider the French-speaking majority's state schools and teachers to be legitimate targets in the English-speaking West, and attack those that refuse to close. Anabi says after the attack, he fled to the English-speaking town of Bamenda, 60 kilometers away, and the station staff in 13 villages went into hiding. Rebels have not claimed responsibility for the attack. However, on social media, they have threatened anyone supporting February 9 elections in Cameroon's English-speaking regions. The separatists are fighting for an independent English-speaking state and have vowed to stop any elections held by Cameroon's French-majority authorities. 24-year-old teacher Antoinette Mello is from Dop and says without Stone FM, people in the town have little access to news and information.
That was the only radio station that informed us, and for the past days, we've not been having any information. It is really difficult because we are preparing for elections and want to hear what candidates are saying.
Jude Viban, the president of the Cameroon Association of English-Speaking Journalists, notes that separatists have been attacking reporters and media in the English-speaking regions for refusing to broadcast their propaganda.
We are calling on the authorities of the country to make sure that they investigate and bring the culprits to book. And we also want to let those who are attacking journalists, as well as those who are attacking media houses, to know that it is sad for our democracy. One of the core values of democracy is press freedom. And each time a journalist or a media house is attacked, it is an attack on democracy.
Viban says journalists are reporting separatist intimidation for simply asking people to vote in the elections. The government has repeated that it will protect all of its citizens and is calling on the population to report any suspected rebels. Stone FM is the third radio station to be attacked in Cameroon's restive English-speaking regions in recent weeks. Since the separatist conflict broke out in 2017, journalists in Cameroon have complained of abuses from both rebels and state security. Close to 30 Cameroonian journalists say they have been detained or threatened while reporting on the conflict. Several were charged with terrorism before the charges were later dropped. The Reporters Without Borders 2019 World Press Freedom Index ranked Cameroon 131st globally. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
Civil servants in Zimbabwe have been in talks with the government about raising their salaries because inflation has dramatically eroded their buying power. The two parties reached an agreement yesterday, but workers feel it is too much of a compromise, and analysts say the raises will likely trigger more price hikes. Reporter Kuzai Zanawashi has the details.
Negotiations have been dragging on for 2 weeks, with civil servants demanding that their salaries be indexed against the US dollar in the interbank exchange market. Government has resisted because the local currency has been dropping steadily. Tapson Nganunu Sibanda is with the Zimbabwe Teachers Association, or ZIMTA. He explains the deal with the government.
Our negotiators at National Joint Negotiation Council, NJNC, have finally agreed to an average of 140% salary increase.
Sibanda says the deal is not what they had in mind, but they could not walk away from it.
It is an uncontested fact that the increment is a far cry from what was expected. It is like the morning dew that soon fizzled out before noon. However, it was thought it wise to accept the little for now, rather than continuing engaging in an ending negotiation process, when on the other hand, teachers can hardly survive for a day.
Political analyst Rashid Mukundu says the civil servants are in a fix and service delivery in government will likely be compromised.
Civil servants are in a tight corner and struggling to make ends meet on paltry salaries. The real danger and crisis is that we now have thousands of civil servants who go to work while distracted from their jobs because of the challenges of meeting their day-to-day living expenses. This means that government business is hugely affected because you have disgruntled and incapacitated staff.
Mukundu says the government is not broke and unable to make a sustainable deal to civil servants, but that the real issue is mismanagement of resources. He says Zimbabwe is not at war, yet it spends the bulk of its money on the security sector and the comfort of the ruling elite. Amalgamated Rural Teachers Union of Zimbabwe says the Apex Council, responsible for negotiating on behalf of the entire civil service, did not prioritize civil servants in the negotiations. In the past, a salary raise for civil servants has triggered price hikes which have further eroded their buying power. As a result, Sibanda says government should stand ready to give another salary increase after February. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zinabashe from Harare.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to the sunny side of sports coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Nashwan Kali, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
Hello, Africa. I'm James Butler, host of your breakfast show, Daybreak Africa. As always, our newsroom is on top of the news of your interest. We provide you with up-to-the-minute news about Africa as well as world news. Tune in to our show right here on VOA Africa, your trusted source of news and information.
The Voice of America's Global News Program, International Edition, brings you an in-depth look at the biggest news stories of the day. Nobody covers the world more comprehensively than VOA. Our correspondents gather the news and the views of the most seasoned experts on international issues. Tune in Monday through Friday at 3:30 and 17:05 UTC on The Voice of America.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning into the Sunny Side of Sports Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/Sunny. It's the Sunny Side of Sports right here on the Voice of America.